92. We're going to talk about the Colorado River Compact. As I was mentioning, I guess I should stand here so people online can see me. As I was mentioning to the class before we officially started, this has been an interesting year for the Colorado River Compact. You picked the right time to come to this class. This will be so much fun. You're going to figure out what some of those particulars are with respect to what you've read in the paper. I have got Becky Mitchell, who is the governor's representative on the river. She'll be talking to you. I have Upper Basin States coming in to talk to you. I have Lower Basin States coming in to talk to you. I have the federal government coming in to talk to you. It's going to be really, really good. So I'm hoping that you're reading those newspaper articles, because it's going to be interesting to ask them questions. Now, the wonderful thing about Grad 592 is that no one says no when Jennifer goes asking them, can you come talk to some graduate students? Can you talk to the students? Oh, can't say no to that. And so thank you for being here in person. I'm Jennifer Gimble. I have about 35 years experience on the Colorado River. I have been a water lawyer in Wyoming and Colorado. I have worked in policy, public policy for the federal government, Bureau of Reclamation, Department of Interior. I was also the governor's representative on the Colorado River from 2008 to 2015, I think it was, maybe 2013. And I went to work for President Obama and worked on the Colorado River there. So I have had the fortune of looking at the Colorado River from a federal perspective as well as a state perspective. And it's my favorite river. It's always been a passion for me. So it was so much fun to bring this to you all this fall. And I'm so glad you're here, because we'll have a good time. We'll have a really good time. I wanted to go around and have you introduce yourselves. And then, and tell me a little bit about, first of all, you know, what are you studying? What's your major? What's your project? What's going on? And then why you took this class. So Kian, since I know Kian is an intern for me on another project, I'm going to start with you.
Sounds good. Hi, I'm Kian Freshwater. I am a master's student in ecosystem science and sustainability, particularly in watershed science. This is my second and final year in the program. And I'm really passionate about water management. I've been working with Jennifer this summer on looking at water management in Colorado and how that affects growth in the state. And in doing so, really learning more about every basin, including the Colorado River, and the challenges that face it. So I'm really excited to take this course.
And he didn't know I was going to be teaching it when he signed up. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Leo. I am a senior in science and sustainability right now, and I'm minoring in watershed science. And last semester, I took a waterlogged policy course that got me really interested in Western waters. And it also seems like something that's kind of pressing right now. So I hope to come talk about that.
Great. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Turner Mason. I'm a natural resource management major with a watershed minor. And I took this class all the conflicts surrounding the Colorado River. And learn more about
it.
Yeah, it won't be finished.
Yeah, it won't be
finished. Go ahead.
I'm Daniel Sanchez. I'm a master's student at the Civil Engineering Department. My thesis is competition field. I took a class on water law last fall, which is very interesting. Myself, and I'm taking it for
Daniel. I now that you mentioned that, I remember you and I had exchanged some emails on that. Sometimes you're going to be here, and sometimes you're going to do it for the internet. Thanks for being here.
Great. Go ahead. My name is Kelly DeBee. I am master's transition PhD in epidemiology. My background is in law and policy. So I grew up in Southern California, and I remember seeing the tail end of the Colorado River. Yeah. I remember seeing the tail end of the Colorado River dry up, like we have this whole aquifer that come into the, yeah. to the valley. And that hasn't been running for 20 years. So the population isn't getting smaller out there. And so when I was growing up, water use was always an issue. And there, it seems like if you can afford to buy your water, you can have as much of it as you want. And so I don't think it's really become a pressing issue until recently. So I come at this from a health perspective. I'm always worried about the health consequences of environmental stuff. So
love the diversity.
Go ahead. Hi, I'm Rachika. I'm a master's student in electrical engineering. The reason I took this class is because I've been always a part of water management resources in Pakistan, India. Uh-huh. So I've been always very particular because a lot of issues in India regarding a lot of stuff with water management. So I've always been curious about reading stuff back in India, and I've been a part of a lot of teams there. So I really wanted to come up and see what's going on here. And I've read a lot about what I've read in newspapers recently, so I'm just interested to be a part of it and see how different it is, how old how things work out here.
Let's
get something back.
Thank you.
I'm Carly. I'm in the FND program, but I've been an environmental engineer since I graduated from undergrad. And the MBA space is really strange for me. I'm in the corporate sustainability track. There's a greenhouse gas certification program, so it's as green as I think the business world can be, but I think I'm from upstate New York, and so water isn't yet a problem, kind of in the east where I'm from.
And they're usually trying to
live. It's been really interesting to live in Colorado the last 5 years and just see kind of what others have mentioned and trying to learn more about how we can connect the watersheds with the day to day, because I think it's just used and abused. And so it's just really fascinating.
Yeah, that's great.
Hi everyone, I'm Yasin. I'm a grad student in agriculture. I took the bus because my research interest as well.
That's great.
I am Vinny. I'm also a MBA student, and I am a plant scientist by training, like Tony. I don't know what I'm doing with it, but a business degree. But I work as a vegetable breeder, and I just come back from California. It's a very interesting conversation around
water. Yeah.
And see all the orchard in California, they use so much water, but there's no water. So it's very interesting to me. I want to know what's the problem is. Can we find any solutions or what are we heading to? Yeah.
Those would be good questions to ask some of the speakers. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Jason Friedman. I'm a first year MFA creative writing and poetry. Before that was living in Phoenix for 11 years. So,
we know all about it.
Some of the issues, yeah. I work in arts and culture. So, I was interested in the Colorado River. I was doing a little bit of writing around it, and my documents and legal things, but I'm kind of ignorant, and that's not my training or specialty, so I kind of came here to kind of just learn and get some knowledge and kind of try to more. I'm just glad to be here.
Try to make it fun.
Hi, my name is Zuri. I'm a second year PhD student in agriculture. Water resource management is one of my areas of interest. I'm prior to experience in water quality skeptics.
Great. Thank you.
My name is Marilla. I am a master research associate. And I'm really interested in like restoration ecology and in like talking to people in that field over the last couple of years. People keep mentioning alpans, like, oh, and you know, and then there's the water rights angles. So I'm like, I'm ready to get into it, especially when you're looking at like wetland restorations. It's really important to know about that kind of stuff in the field. So I'm excited to be a little more knowledgeable and actually be able to talk about it and with information behind what I say. You know?
Great, welcome.
I'm Cesar Gardino. I'm in my second year in my master's in public policy and administration. And I guess I just always had an interest in environmental issues, especially relevant.
That's great. Did you say electrical engineer? Okay, no, that's fine. Just wanted to make sure I heard right.
So water is an essential quantity for us. I think we should preserve it for future generations. So I'm just here to know like how we are destroying it and how can we mitigate it. At least I can tell to my own things like what we did and what we did. What are the processes we are taking to mitigate.
Thank you. That's great. Allie, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, I'm Allie. I am a senior at CSU. I'm an accounting major. If you have any questions about this class, I will just refer you to Jennifer. But I work with Jennifer and I'll be facilitating the class studying Canvas. So if you have any questions like that, you can message me on Canvas this is my third year facilitating with Jennifer and this class is also
has sat through all the classes.
Do I know much about water? No, but it's been very interesting. I can't absorb it the way you guys can. It's awesome. But last year we had a really good class because everyone was so passionate and really wanted to ask a lot of questions. And so that's my recommendation. Like, get your worth out of this class because there's so much.
Thank you, Ellen. I really appreciate your support. And I apologize to those of you that are on the streaming services. I needed to have the class introduce themselves. This is really just kind of a kickoff class. We're not going to get into a whole lot just yet. We have some housekeeping things to do, but I love the diversity of the class. I mean, except we're missing a poli-sci person. I usually have a political science person here, you guys can step in. That'll be really good. So let's get into some of the basics. Oops. What we're going to cover, I'm going to do a little bit of history today, just a few minutes talking about John Wesley Powell and the beginnings of the discussions for dividing up the river. Brad Udall also works for the Water Center. You might have seen him on 60 Minutes. Colorado River has gotten national attention. And Brad is the go-to scientist when it comes to climate change and the river. So he will be here in a couple of weeks. I've invited Ute Mountain Ute and Ute Southern Ute representatives to come talk to you. Don't know who that's going to be yet. They're very busy at this point, but we'll get that Native American perspective. We have Northern Colorado. I have Brad Wynn from the Northern Water Conservancy District, CBT project. Western Colorado, we're going to have the River District. Andy Mueller is the manager of the Colorado River District. And then we have the Southwest District, who is Steve Wolf. These are all people I've worked with. We're going to have policy for State of Colorado. That would be Becky Mitchell. I've got Chuck Collin here, who represents the Upper Colorado River Commission. And then have Brenda Berman, who is a former Bureau Commissioner, U.S. Bureau Commissioner. She's the first woman to be a Bureau Commissioner. And she will be coming and talking about the lower basin perspective, as well as giving you a bit of the federal government perspective. And I have Jennifer Pitt, who has done incredible work on the Colorado River, also with her Taylor Hawes with the Nature Conservancy. So that's a preview of what we're going to cover. So here are the requirements. Attending seminar and signing in person is worth 60% of your grade. I'm a lawyer by trade. And if you tell me you were here, but you didn't sign in, I'm inclined not to believe that. Not because I don't trust you. It's just, I have to have evidence. So make sure you sign in. I know a couple people came in afterwards. So sign the sign-up sheet. Your final project is 40% of the grade. And there I'm asking you to compare a comparison and discussion of another river basin system, national or international. India would be fine. And, you know, some of the, you know, lessons learned on the Colorado River. How would you apply it to some of the interesting things going on with respect to that? Papers are due on December 5th, and we will have very minute presentations because there's 15 of you and we don't have time for 5 minutes. So, but papers are due then. I will put assignments in Canvas. The first assignment for the first two classes is this paper, done by a friend of mine, Karen Kwan, and I. And it's really the basics. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify on wording. So they'll be in the assignments of required reading for their
test. Okay, so it'd be like a link.
Yeah, it'll be a required reading.
Okay. Oh, gotcha. Okay, thank you. And for those of you that didn't pick up one of these, feel free. I've got tons of them. The things that I'll put in the readings are meant to help you think of questions for the particular speaker that you're going to be hearing from. So give yourself 15 minutes, weekend or lunch to, you know, on Mondays, and look through it and let's say, what do I want to know about that? And the attendance on November 28th and December 5th is mandatory. November 28th is when we are going to decide how to fix the Colorado River. So keep that in mind also as you're hearing all these presentations. And hopefully give you ideas as you're putting your papers together. You know, what worked, what doesn't work. Going with that. September 26th, there will be no class because CSU is putting on a symposium called Living with the Colorado River Compact on May 26th. It's from 8:30 to 4. I know you have other classes. I will be asking you to sign up and attend at least an hour. I'll let you choose what hour you want that to be. And when we get the sign up sheet live, there will be, there's a tuition cost, but you don't have to pay it. You just have a spot where you say, I'm in Jennifer's class in grad 592. This is a really stellar day of talking. The point of this symposium is not to do the water wonk stuff. I go to all these conferences and we just talk water stuff. This is to help people understand what are written in newspapers, help them understand kind of the basics of the Colorado River and some of the issues that are going on the Colorado River. Plus, we have a panel that's going to talk about what CSU has been doing to help those conversations. So I think you'll find it interesting. So work it around your other classes. Unfortunately, at 4 o'clock, the conference will be over, so that time period won't work, but please try to work that in. I'd really appreciate having you go to this. I gave you the Quenching the Thirst of the Colorado River Basin. Two other documents that you can find online, and we'll put them in the reading material is the Colorado Water Law by the Water Education Colorado Foundation and Colorado's Interstate Water Compacts. Those are written again for people who are not in the water business and want a just general understanding of what's going on. Let me stop there. Questions? Yes, sir. Well, this will be the longest one. And it's for two classes. And some of it, as we look at particular topics, then we can go into those particular things. But I try to keep them shorter, but informative. And so, yeah. Any other questions?
What's a water compact?
Water compacts? What do you mean? What's the publication?
I've seen that.
What is a water
compact? Yeah, like what does that mean?
Thank you. All right. So a water compact. Well, we're going to get to that. Okay. Stop me anytime. I get rolling. And I can talk about the Colorado River here to forever. So, and if I get too in the weeds, say, Jennifer, what are you talking about? Like water compacts. So let's just start with a little bit of history. John Wesley Powell, you all heard of him. He was working for the federal government. He came out here to the Wild West, where there were Native American tribes, Hispanic, and European explorations were going on. And Manifest Destiny was moving the United States population into the West. So he decided in 1869 to explore the great unknown. I apologize for those of you I keep walking around. That great unknown was the Colorado River. He had an expedition of 10 men that started in Green River, Wyoming, and went all the way down to Lake Mead, where Lake Mead is now, which is the mouth of the Virgin River, 900 miles. If you're interested in history, his diary is incredible to read. I don't know if you know, but John Wesley Powell lost an arm in the Civil War. And so he's doing this boating and riding and hiking with one arm. Yes, sir. Okay. Oh, which side?
Yeah, not
both. Sorry. I you're asking about I thought he was for the north, but I don't know that for sure. But good question. There's this wonderful story in his diary of how he was on a hike. And he came up to a canyon area. And he's looking over it. And he falls. Deep, deep dive. He would have been dead. Except with his good arm, his good hand, he grabbed a weed. He grabbed the plant that was there. Started yelling to his men, help, help, help. So one of his men came over. Here's this guy, one arm. He's holding on for his life with one arm. And he's like, how am I going to get this guy up? So he took off his underwear. Remember in the long days, they had those union suits. And he used it as a rope for Powell to grab onto. And they brought him back up. So that's one of those interesting stories. This man had a lot of. So that's one of my favorite stories. So started out with 10 men. Six of them survived. They lost four of them along the way. He then wrote a report to Congress. And maybe you've heard this before, but he highly recommended that because the West was so arid, that when they start forming territories and states out here, that they look at the river basins and that they used the river basins as the dividing lines between states. Well, that didn't work, obviously. And so Congress decided to carve us up the way pretty much we are now. But that's John Wesley Powell is an interesting figure when we come to talk about the Colorado River. So in 1876, Colorado became a state. You can see the territories there that were made up Colorado. And they adopted what's called the prior appropriation system in the Constitution. What is the prior appropriation system? Jake? That's exactly right. It's a concept that came out of mining law, where the first to lay a claim had the best right to that claim. And so they just used that law with respect to water. And in fact, the prior appropriation doctrine that's adopted in the Constitution is also called the Colorado Doctrine. Colorado was the first state to actually make it a law, and the Supreme Court had already decided before the Constitution that prior appropriation doctrine was how water would be administered in the state. The differences between prior appropriation and what they did on the East Coast. On the East Coast, if you're near the water, you can use the water, but you have to be reasonable. And if the river flow decreases, if there's a shortage, everybody shares the shortages. You cannot, under the riparian system, take that water and use it off-site. Prior appropriation doctrine lets you use it wherever you want. As long as you take it from the river, you can shuttle it, build your canal, and to whatever land you think you've got.
I'm sorry, so in riparian states, are there no divergences?
There are divergences, and that gets into a whole nother level of riparian law that I am not that conversant on. But it's morphed. What's happened is the eastern states that are under riparian system are starting to morph a little bit more into permitting systems for that very reason. So it's just an interesting play on how we did. So we have here, I always like this map because it kind of shows the different water governance systems. Go ahead, Jake. I love you guys. Just hide in there. That's the red states. Yeah.
And you said the Supreme Court had
the territorial court for Colorado ruled that in Colorado, the prior appropriation doctrine applied. So if you had two people fighting over the river, and I got sidetracked. This is so much fun. Under the prior appropriation doctrine, under the riparian doctrine, you share in the shortages. Not so with the prior appropriation doctrine. The prior appropriation doctrine says whoever got to that water first and put it to beneficial use has the better right. So if you have a senior who wants X amount of water and has that water right, he can call out a whole river, anybody else, until he gets his water right. So that's that first in right, first in time. So it's, I explain this. I went to Harvard School for a thing talking about water. And, well, we were talking about conflict resolution. And I was explaining this to people from all over the world, and they looked at me like I was crazy. Why would anybody adopt this kind of system? Because you're not sharing shortages. The seniors, if there's a shortage on the river, the most senior right gets all of his water first, and then the next right gets all of his water. That's the prior appropriation. This map shows, you know, the red states, prior appropriation system. If you'll notice, it's a regulated riparian system, to answer your question. Because there are water cups out there called State Engineer's Office and Water Commissioners. And they have the ability to turn off and on gates. I'm thinking there's another book I need to. Oh, actually, that one reading about Colorado water law, I think this we need to definitely put that on the list because that kind of explains all of this.
Will the slides be posted?
Yes. Yes, they will.
This is also being
recorded. And this is also being recorded. So, Ken?
What is the niche of California?
That's exactly right. So you have the orange states or the prior appropriation doctrine, pretty strict, although that's loosening up a bit just because society has learned that they want more out of life than just water for people. The Texas and California and Nebraska, they have this mix of prior appropriation and riparian doctrine. And it's, don't ask me about California. A couple of you guys said you're from California. Maybe you can explain it. I don't try to go there. So I see California as a big black hole. So that, I have to apologize. I didn't start. Just started right in on Colorado River and didn't realize we had several people in here that don't understand the prior appropriation system. I will try to talk about that a little bit more next time. And I have a couple of slides, I think, that'll help you understand what it means and how it works. But let's, for now, look at the Colorado River system here. This basin is, let me see, where's my notes? Seven states, two countries, headwaters, Wyoming and Colorado, comes on down. We have Glen Canyon Dam here, and that's Lake Powell. Here's the Grand Canyon. Then we go to Lake Mead, which is the Hoover Dam. Then we come on down. We have several structures that help deliver water to the lower basin states, and it comes down to Mexico. Oops. Do I have the aqueduct on here? Yes. All American Canal is right down here in Lower California. This basin is 1,400 miles long, drains 250,000 square miles, provides water to 40 million people and 5.5 million acres of irrigated agriculture. It contributes, this is about 4 years old, $1.5 trillion a year to the national economy. It's a big basin. And 4,200 megawatts of clean hydropower. The interesting thing about this basin is that it provides water to many populous areas. And that's why I put this on the map. You can see the Front Range, the Denver municipalities all in here. We have Cheyenne gets Colorado River water. Arkansas River gets Colorado River water. So does Salt Lake. We've got New Mexico, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, all getting Colorado River. None of them are in the basin. So these are all transbasin diversions. And then, of course, the big one, California, Los Angeles, and San Diego. So I love this print. You heard it. Mark Twain never said it, but some people like to think he said it. No. Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. So we have this river that goes through seven states. In fact, and because nobody listened to Powell, all of the rivers in Colorado go out to other states. I think it's like 13 states, nine rivers that just go out. So we're a headwater state. Well, being on top is good, but unfortunately, you have to share. And so there started to develop these water fights between the states. So what do you, if I'm Wyoming, and I think Colorado is using too much of the water in the Laramie River, what do I do? Well, the Constitution provides, and it's Article 3, Section 2, if two states have issues, they can petition the Supreme Court to resolve that issue. Now, as a state, as a sovereign, you don't have to start out like at a district court level or a state court level. You go directly to the Supreme Court. And it's the only time the Supreme Court acts as a judge for a trial. Now, that's hard for them to do, those nine folks that are busy with all these things. So what they do is they appoint a special master who then runs the trial, takes the facts, hears the arguments, and makes the recommendation. So this is another one of my favorite slides. I'd rather be upstream with the shovel than downstream with the water, right? Well, Colorado was upstream. And Wyoming said, petitioned the Supreme Court and said, Colorado's using too much water. We're not getting our fair share of water. Similarly, earlier, there was a conversation going on, a conflict actually, between Kansas and Colorado on the Arkansas River. Where Kansas is saying, Colorado's using too much. Upstream state, they're all after us, right? The Supreme Court started hinting that since Wyoming and Colorado and Kansas and Colorado adopted the doctrine of prior appropriation, first to use it is the better right, that is what they would do in these conflicts. Whoever put that water to beneficial use first gets it, regardless of the others that come on later. All right, well, for the Laramie River, that wasn't so bad. They ended up, you know, Wyoming had used it first, so they had the better right. With that, how much that right was, the Supreme Court gave them a certain amount of water. The Kansas, the Arkansas case, Kansas didn't really come to a decree. The court said, if you come back here, if you don't resolve your differences, I don't see enough evidence right now, Kansas, to complain. They caught up to us, though. But if we were to decide, we'd use the doctrine of prior appropriation. All right. So here we are up in Colorado, and we're watching California. We're watching Los Angeles. And we're watching Los Angeles get bigger. And we know that they're, with that aqueduct, they're taking Colorado River water and building their economy on Colorado River water. Well, Colorado got a little nervous about that. A lawyer who actually argued one of the cases on the Laramie River, his name is Delf Carpenter. He's from Greeley, Colorado. He was a lawyer and a rancher. And this book, if you're interested in history, Silver Fox of the Rockies by Dan Tyler, is a really interesting book about negotiations of the Colorado River and Dan Tyler's life. Ken thought about this. And he was in the legislature, the state legislature. He was buds with all the governors. I mean, he was a big guy, big wig. And he said, I think there's another way we can approach these water conflicts. And here's the answer for what is a water compact. He looked at Article 1, Section 10, that said states can enter into agreements with the consent of Congress. Never been used before in water disputes, never even thought of. Had been used, I think, in a couple of states when they were arguing about the boundary. And they used this. This is called the compact clause. So this is what gave us the authority to enter into an agreement. So to answer your question, water compacts are agreements among the states. He then went to all the other six basin states, talked to their representatives. They all got permission from their governor and their legislatures to join a discussion of how to divide up the Colorado River. Federal government agreed. And in fact, I write this down and then I forget where I'm going. So we had Herbert Hoover, who at the time was appointed chair of the negotiations, and he was the Secretary of Commerce. Of course, he came on later to be president. So you have the feds kind of hosting these talks. 2 years of discussions, 2 years of negotiations, looking at data. Jake, you've had your hand up, I apologize. So we're like 1920. Yeah. And these guys met. This is the day of no airplanes, no internet, no Zoom meetings. These guys spent days on trains traveling here and there and everywhere. I was fortunate enough to help the water archives, and they were trying to type out Delph's diaries so that you could search them electronically. So I did a year of Delph Carpenter in his diary, and it was very interesting. A ticket from Greeley to Denver was $1.25. He spent 75 cents for breakfast and treated two people to breakfast with him. This is really, really interesting. But he spent all this time, and Delph was not a healthy man. He suffered Parkinson's disease. And if you look at his diaries, you can see as you go years and years how that affected him. But he was very smart, very congenial. He got the states together, they all agreed we have to do something. So they originally started out saying, so let's just divide up the river. So Wyoming gets so much, Arizona gets so much, yada, yada, yada. No, that didn't work. The data they looked at, lots of data going, like today, lots of different scientists deciding what's the average amount of water in the river. And the group decided to use data by the former, the entity that became the Bureau of Reclamation. They rejected data by the USGS Service. And they decided there was probably about 18 million acre feet of water a year. They could not figure out how to divide it up. Finally, and this is like the last week, the last 2 days, they're in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and somebody has the idea, can we just divide up the two basins, an upper basin and a lower basin? And that worked. A lot of conversation around that, but that's why we have the compact then divides up the river into two basins. Here's a picture of the signing of the compact, and here's our good friend Delph standing over Herbert Hoover. And this was done at the end of the governor's Santa Fe.
I can talk pretty fast. You guys have been good about popping in. Any questions or thoughts at this point? Jake? No? All right. How am I doing on time here? Don't have much. So the purposes of the Colorado River Compact, equitable apportionment of the river, secure agriculture and industrial development of the basin, store of flows. There were lots and lots of floods on the Colorado River. So the lower basin really wanted storage to help control those floods. So this is essentially the compact. You have the upper basin was, they decided on 15 million acre feet to divide up because there'd be plenty more after that. Upper basin got 7.5 million acre feet. The dividing point was a place off the river called Lee Ferry. It's a very, if you haven't floated the Grand Canyon, put it on your list. So Lee Ferry is where that dividing point. Lower basin got 7.5, but they also got another million acre feet because of the Gila and the Salt Rivers that were in the lower basin. The compact recognized that Mexico was going to get some of this river. Didn't say how much, just knew that that was coming. And so they acknowledged that. The compact acknowledged the fact that there were Native Americans out there who probably had rights. They did nothing about it. They just said, yeah, we acknowledge it. We're going to talk a little bit about how that's affected the Native Americans on the river. So with that, let's see, another piece of the compact is the upper basin is obligated to not deplete the flows at Lee Ferry 75 million acre feet over 10 years. So it's a rolling average. In other words, how this is played out is the upper basin agreed to take the risk of the variability of the hydrology. And still committed to not depleting those flows. It's not a delivery obligation, although it kind of plays out that way. We'll talk about that later. So with that, I think we've run out of time and I don't want to keep you any longer. But thank you for your questions. For those of you that have been online, I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we'll have a better lecture for you next time. I will talk about prior appropriation system a little bit too. Because the class is classroom is fine. Aren't you lucky? Yeah, you had a question? Is that it? Oh no. Sorry. I thought I saw your hand up. Yeah, there's a huge mix up in how this class got going, but we finally got where we are. When I invite the speakers to come, I tell them that, you know, that sometimes you have other classes and other obligations and that you can leave the class at 4:50. But if you're interested and we're engaged in a conversation, and if you can wait and introduce yourself to some of these speakers, that would be great. So we reserve the room till 5:30. Thank you for anything else?
I don't need the whole people here, but okay, so if people have water rights prior to this compact being developed and the upper basin states are trying to get 7.5 million acre feet to Lee Ferry, if these users above Lee Ferry still want their water and it will deplete the upper basin states below that point, will they still get their water, or does the compact trump that?
One of the provisions in the compact says that all rights prior to 1922, as whatever the date is, are pre-compact rights and cannot be restricted because of compact obligation. That is why, so most of the pre-compact rights, almost all of them, are agriculture, because that's how we were developing. As in the West, was the agriculture. But as I showed, a lot of municipalities depend on Colorado River water. Those municipalities are all junior. So if we have to start curtailing rights, it's most likely that those municipalities are going to have to be curtailed. But thank you. I meant to mention that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, that made me think of something else.
No, go for it.
Isn't there also some rule in Colorado saying that if there's not enough water for municipalities, they can curtail?
There is in the Constitution, and it's in this section that talks about prior appropriation, that municipalities have a prior right. The way that's been interpreted by the Colorado Supreme Court is that municipalities could condemn to get more water. So the state engineer, who's the water cop essentially, would necessarily curtail or could curtail them, but they can go out and condemn water rights. Never been done. Nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants to shut down water for 40 million people. And so that's part of these conversations. Very, very good. Did you have a question? We're going to talk about that next week. But to answer your question, in the treaty, they created the International Boundary Clean Water Commission. Those commissions for both sides, United States and Mexico, answer to their each nation's State Department, essentially. Their job is to manage the river and the boundaries and any disputes that come up. Mexico has been an incredible leader on the river and accepting to share shortages during all of this drought. We'll talk about that later. Yeah. All right. See you next week.